Welcome to Reshaping Workflows with Dell Pro Precision and NVIDIA, where innovation meets real-world impact in high-performance computing.
Welcome back to another exhilarating episode, Reshaping Workflows with Dell Pro Precision and NVIDIA RTX GPUs. I'm your host, Logan Lawler. So today, we've covered a lot of topics on the show. I mean, as of time of this recording, I think we're at 71, 72 episodes. But today we've got something kind of special, right? Most of the time we're talking to different AI companies and things like that. But we actually have an academic on the call, which I absolutely love because a lot of you are academics by trade in the listening group. So with that, Stefano, thank you for coming on the show. Take a minute or so, introduce yourself to everyone and just do kind of a high overview of your background.
Of course. Yeah. Excited to be here. Thanks for inviting me. I'm Stefano Ermon. I'm one of the founders and the CEO of Inception. It's a AI lab where we're developing new kind of LLM that is based on diffusion technology. So these are LLMs that are significantly faster and more efficient than what everybody else is building. And this technology is building on some of the research that I've been doing in my lab at Stanford. Before starting the company, I've been a professor in the computer science department at Stanford for over 10 years, doing research in generative models, I guess what's now called generative AI. And my group is mostly famous for early work on diffusion models. Again, the technology that is now used to power a lot of the models that you're using to generate images, video, music, and increasingly more also text and code with diffusion-based LLMs. I've also worked on architectures. I was on the flash attention paper that you might have heard of. And so I've kind of like done work across all levels of the stack, from architectures, data, pre-training, post-training. And excited to be here today.
So you were on the paper for flash attention, or you wrote the paper?
I contributed. Most of the credit goes to Tridao, who was my PhD student, and he did all the hard work. But I contributed a little bit to that work.
We have talked with, a few more traditional, model makers and stuff like that in previous episodes. But diffusion's a whole new beast, right? And that is, generative images, it could video, etc. How does a diffusion type model differ from more of a transformer type model, a regular old chatbot would use? How do they differ? And you can give kind of like a high level of pretend you're talking to my mom who's 70 and a boomer, but then you can give kind of a technical answer too. So I'm really curious.
Yeah, for sure. So, if you've ever asked a question to a chatbot or like ChatGPT or Gemini or Claude, you ask a question and then it would produce an answer, and you see that it will generate the text or the code kind of like left to right, one token, just kind of like a word at a time, right? And that's a very sequential type of procedure where you kind of like cannot generate, let's say, the 10th word until you've generated everything that comes before it. And that's the kind of technology that is behind most of the existing LLMs from OpenAI, Anthropic, Meta, Google. Everyone is kind of like building on that sort of approach. A diffusion model is a completely different kind of generative process where instead of generating, let's say, text or an image left to right, one pixel at a time, you start with pure noise and then you gradually refine every pixel in the image until you kind of like improve the quality until you get a clean image or a clean video at the end. And the key difference is that this generation process is very parallel, because at every step of iterative refinement, you're able to modify every pixel or every token or every word at the same time. And so it's a very different kind of generative process, but it's much more parallel. It's much more suitable to GPUs. And it's the kind of technology that powers most of the state-of-the-art models to generate images, video, music, like continuous kinds of objects. And what we're doing at Inception is we're taking that approach and using it to generate text and code, so we can get all the benefits of the increased parallelism to basically have LLMs that have the same quality as what everybody else is building, but because they are more parallel, they scale better at inference time, which is the dimension that matters today.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, kind of a tag along question to that and kind of a point is, right, if you've ever used something like Comfy UI, you can see that, you know, you add in your noise and it's kind of solves over time, you know. And if you use, you know, like an NVIDIA RTX Pro Blackwell 6000 and you generate an image or video, it's going to pretty much use every bit of that GPU capacity. But you do the same kind of, you know, a chat search with ChatGPT OSS, for example, it's not like that. It's much different, right? So I know companies kind of go through very serious lengths to try to optimize inference at the end of the day, right? To basically solve that question. So, you know, let me ask, like within the company, within VSC, like, and you don't have to share anything proprietary or anything like that. I don't want someone watching Anthropic, like, or whoever trying to steal ideas, but you're going through this and you're trying to do this with diffusion models to make it kind of much quicker. Can you kind of talk through some of the stuff that you're actually trying to do?
So at inception, the company that we started we've pioneered basically a whole serving stack that can be used to serve diffusion-based LLMs in production to achieve much better utilization on GPUs. And so as you mentioned, the key challenge when you try to serve autoregressive LLMs in production today is that the workload that you have at inference time is memory bound. So what that means is that you're spending a lot of time moving around the weights of the neural network across the memory hierarchy, and you're not able to do a whole lot of arithmetic. You're not able to do a lot of operations on this weight. And the reason is that the workload is sequential. Like you can generate only one token at a time. You can process only one token at a time because you cannot process future tokens until you've decided what kind of answer, what kind of value you're going to assign to all the previous tokens. And that's the fundamental bottleneck. That's the problem with autoregressive models. That's why you see everyone kind of like all the pressure on HBM manufacturers and the craziness about trying to get the highest possible memory bandwidth on GPUs, because that's the bottleneck that it's making autoregressive models very slow. On the other hand, a diffusion-based language model, it's still kind of using a transformer under the hood, but the key difference is that it's designed to process many tokens at the same time. And so the way it works is that you essentially still have a neural network, you still process text, and it's still a transformer, but each forward pass is not just giving you one token, it's able to modify many tokens at the same time. And so all those matrix vector multiplies that you had before become a matrix multiplies because you're able to modify many tokens at the same time. And that kind of workload is no longer memory bound, it becomes compute bound. And so we're able to actually take advantage of all the flops that are available on GPUs, and the arithmetic intensity of a diffusion based LLM inference workload, it's much higher. And that's kind of like the key idea. We had to design a different kind of LLM that maps to the kind of hardware we have access today. And that's what's enabling us to be much more efficient compared to autoregressive models. And what this means is that we can actually generate tokens about 10x faster compared to autoregressive models. And so we're able to serve diffusion-based LLMs, let's say on NVIDIA GPUs, at over 1,000 tokens per second, which are speeds that were only previously possible, yeah, using custom ASICs like Cerebras or Grok or Sambanova, like these kind of custom AI inference chips. And that's entirely due to the increased level of parallelism that we have at the software level.
Wow. Okay. So lots of questions. One, I had no idea. I mean, 1,000 tokens a second on any workstation-grade GPU is like out of the water, regardless of what model you're using, not diffusion models, but even, you know, smaller models, you might get 500 or 600. I mean, that's crazy. So what, don't share anything too super secret, but obviously you've got a skill in being able to parallelize the GPU and use it in a way that is kind of, I would say, unique to you in that speed, right? But there's also a lot of, you know, you have NVIDIA, right? You have Grok, you've got some others, right? Like, does it run on all of that? Is it specifically bound to NVIDIA? Like, I'm just curious.
Yeah. So in theory, it can be run on any hardware accelerator. Our stack is heavily optimized for NVIDIA. NVIDIA is an investor in Inception, in the company. And so we've been collaborating closely to optimize the kernels and the serving stack to NVIDIA hardware. But we're increasingly exploring and testing the performance on other platforms, and the benefits will translate. As long as, you know, there are flops available, we can use them, and we can make generation way faster than what's possible with an autoregressive model.
So, Stefano, like, here's kind of a question for you. So I'm looking at this, probably goes and shows my level of ignorance, right? But I'm fairly familiar with models, right? Like, I've heard of the Black Forest Labs. I've heard, you know, of the diffusion models, kind of video models out of China. I've heard this. I've never heard of Inception. So let's maybe start with, I'm taking a look at your website, kind of with Mercury. Maybe let's talk about a little bit of what it does. What is the size? You know, let's start with size. Like, what, you know, what do you think it's really good at compared to other models? Let's give people kind of a high level of what Mercury is all about.
Yeah, for sure. So Mercury is the first commercial scale diffusion-based language model. So as we discussed, it's a completely different kind of LLM that is based on the diffusion paradigm, where instead of generating left or right one token at a time, you are able to essentially generate an answer by refining it and modifying many tokens at the same time. What this buys you from a user perspective is that the answers that you get are, you get answers very, very quickly. We're able to get to over 1,000 tokens per second in terms of throughput, which is enabling a lot of latency sensitive applications. So Mercury 2, you can think of it as a replacement for traditional autoregressive LLMs. The API is all backwards compatible with, let's say, an OpenAI compatible endpoint. So the API from an application developer perspective is the same, text in, text out, or text in, code out. It's just like you're going to get the answers very, very quickly. And that's very important if you're building applications that are interactive. So we're seeing, now these models are available in production today. You can go to our website, you can sign up, you can get an API key, and you can start building stuff on top of these models. And to give you a sense of the kind of customers we have right now, we're seeing a lot of traction in a few areas. Voice agents is one where we're seeing a lot of use. Of course, if you're building a voice agent, the experience has to be quick. It has to be interactive. And one of the key bottlenecks is the LLM that is used to figure out what you're going to say next, what kind of tools you're going to call to extract the information that you need to provide a useful answer to, let's say, your customer, if you're building a customer support agent. And we're seeing more and more customers replacing traditional autoregressive LLMs with Mercury 2 because it's giving them the best experience. Like, within the latency budget that they have, where they need to provide an answer within a few hundred milliseconds, Mercury 2 is giving you the best possible quality. And so people are building like really powerful voice customer support agents using Mercury 2. Another example are search agents. That's another experience that we're starting to get more and more used to, where you ask a question and an agent is basically going to run a bunch of web searches, queries on the web to extract relevant information. It's going to process that information. It might decide to do more searches based on that information, and then it's going to combine all that all the information on these websites to give you an answer at the end. Again, the experience has to be interactive, several top players in this space are now using Mercury 2 in production today to power their agents, because again, it gives them speeds and qualities that are just not possible with traditional autoregressive models. And the other one, in the coding space, we have several customers that are building coding agents or sub-agents on top of Mercury 2. Augment Code is an example. They are using Mercury 2 to power all of their sub-agents. So if you think about context compaction, classification, summarization, title generation, a lot of these use cases where you don't need frontier-level intelligence and really you care about cost and speed, Mercury 2 is a great option, and it's now used across a variety of different use cases where you care about interactivity and you have large volumes and you really care about reducing costs.
So think of Mercury 2, it's kind of the Swiss Army knife, whether it is reasoning, agentic coding, and then Mercury 2 edit, think of it as, you know, the diffusion-based LLM. So I'm kind of taking a look at the pricing here. And it's actually, you know, relatively speaking, in the land of, you know, API, cloud-based kind of LLMs, it's not very expensive, like in the grand scheme of things. For input for Mercury 2, for 25 cents a million tokens and output 0.75, if you've never looked up the price of a, you know, what Opus 5 or Fable cost, just go look and you'll see that. I mean, but I do have a question here, is that one, well, two-part question. One, the 128K context window seems a little small to me, and I'm not the expert, you're the expert, that's why you're on the show, but it seems a little small to me. And the reason I say that is I'm, you know, played around with like DeepSeek before Pro and some others, right, where very large context windows. Is there something within the model that within Mercury 2 that you're like, hey, we don't really need this, and you can have a smaller context window? I'm just curious, because I think about long-running coding agents, right? Bigger the context window, generally the better it is, but correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, and I think context context length is for sure important, and it's something that we're working to extend and improve with the next generations of the models. The company, I mean, Inception has been around for a couple of years, and so there's still a lot of ground that we need to cover to, you know, figure out even how to build these models and how to get the best possible performance from these diffusion-based LLMs. And so there's nothing fundamentally limiting when you think about a diffusion-based LLM versus a traditional one in terms of context length. It's just like we need to get more long context data and use more compute essentially to train models that are capable of processing even longer contexts. And that's something that we are actively working on, and new generations of models that we already have in private beta, or like we're testing out with some customers, have even longer context length. So stay tuned. It's coming soon.
Kind of next question is, like I kind of mentioned it before, right? Is that, and probably to my own naivety, is that I hadn't heard of Inception, right? Before, had not. I know that you work with some big, big customers. You have to name names, right? But are you getting, you know, the customer base that you built? I mean, how are they finding you? Like, do you know what I mean? Is it because of your work and the work that you've done at Stanford and other places that your name is known, and then it translates over? Because like, I use OpenRouter for some stuff, and when I was looking, I don't ever remember seeing, you know, Mercury on this. And I looked through everything because I was like, oh, does this have, I don't know, Perplexity, or what all does this have? So I'm curious.
Yeah, if you go on OpenRouter, we are there. And if you go on the rankings.
Trying you today. I'm going to do it.
Yeah. And you go on the rankings and you sort and you see like which you look at the speed of the different models, and you really care about speed, you'll see that we're among the top models, right? And we're the only GPU-based model that is able to give you speeds that are, again, comparable to what you would get with Cerebras-based solutions or Grok-based solutions. And so a lot of our customers are currently Cerebras customers, and they're looking to switch to something that is more affordable and more scalable, or just they're building something and they really care about speed. And whenever they, you know, they're looking at the landscape and they're trying to evaluate different LLMs in terms of cost, quality, and speed, they kind of look at what's available. Maybe they go on artificial analysis to see kind of like where do different models land, which models should I use for this application? And that's how they find us. In fact, if you go on artificial analysis and you use their model selector, that they have a tool that helps you choose the right model for the right problem. And, you know, depending on how much you care about quality, how much you care about speed, how much you care about cost, if you have an application where you really care about speed and you really care about cost, Mercury 2 will come out as the recommended model. And so that's how some customers are coming to us inbound, just like because they want to build something where speed matters. And we are available also on bigger cloud providers. So we are on AWS, we are on Foundry, on Azure. And so that's a lot of our customers are actually enterprise. We're much more focused on enterprise customers as opposed to just individual developers and consumers. And so that's also like another channel where we get them to try our models and eventually become our customers and shift their production workloads.
So you'll have one more try at it today, because I'm just morbidly curious and I like to play. So walk me through one customer. If you can name names, that's great. If you can't, but, you know, understand speed is important, right? But I think there's always a balance of like speed and accuracy and like ability. And like, it's, you know, I think what one of my dads say, there's three things. You can either have it done right, have it done fast, or done cheap, and you only get to pick two. I think the cheap piece you've got covered. And not saying your models are cheap, but cost-wise, very expensive. You can have it done fast. But tell me about some of the use case, like a customer in a use case where speed was like absolutely paramount and why they needed Inception and Mercury.
Yeah. So the one example is in the voice space. So OpenCall is a startup. They're building customer support voice agents. They really care about speed when they choose LLMs to power their agents. Because, you know, if the agent is taking too long to provide an answer, like the experience from the customer perspective is just, it's just horrible. They built an initial product that was using open source models served on Cerebras. And eventually they decided that they wanted something more scalable. We got them to try Mercury 2. And what they found was that they were basically able to get the same kind of latencies, the same kind of speeds that they were getting before on Cerebras using Mercury 2. And the quality was good enough. The quality was the same. The model was able to recall the right tools, was able to provide the right answers. And so they switched their production workloads to Mercury 2 because it was basically giving them a better product, better customer experience at the end when they were using our LLM as kind of like the brain for their agent.
Do you have another customer? I mean, I could think of, I mean, do you have, I'm just thinking out loud here, but I'd love to hear about another customer where speed really matter. I'm thinking about kind of AI and cybersecurity where time really, really matters if there's a breach and things like that, which I mean, other models are fast, but if you can find out stuff 10x faster, that's huge. So if you have one like that, be great, or any other customer.
This one, we have a few in the AI search space. I cannot say their names, but there are some of the biggest players in the space, folks that are building, essentially think of them as deep research agents or AI search agents, where the customers, the users are basically asking questions, and then the agent has to search the web for relevant references. It has to process them. It has to figure out how to combine information. It has to figure out maybe what additional searches you need to do after reading these websites. Again, it's a latency sensitive kind of application where you need to be able to provide answers effectively in real time to the users if you want the experience to be good. And several big players in this space are now using Mercury 2 to power their agents because, again, it gives them a really fast answers and the quality is better than what they were getting from competing models from and in this case, we were competing with closed source speed optimized models from Frontier Labs. So think of Gemini Flash or Claude Haiku or like Mini Nano models from OpenAI. They were previously using some combination of these, and they what they saw was that they were actually able to get higher quality and better speeds when switching to Mercury 2.
So with Mercury 2, I'm not trying to draw like an exact comparison because I know every model is different, right? But everyone's familiar with Anthropic, right? You've got Fable, you've got Opus, you have Sonnet, you have Haiku. Where does Mercury 2 fit into that?
It's a Haiku level model. So we don't claim to have a frontier level intelligence yet. We have stronger models coming out, but we started with the medium-sized model, which ended up being comparable. If you look at benchmarks, if you look at artificial analysis, let's say on agentic task, it's pretty comparable to the kind of quality you would get from a Haiku level model.
So I got to ask, because you said you, like most people, it seems out of the gate, like when you're building a model, they go big first and then they go kind of smaller. It sounds like you started in the example of, you know, the Haiku, Sonnet, Opus, Fable, you started smaller. One, why did you pick that direction first? And then two, is there any architectural or underlying bottlenecks that not prevent, but you're getting all this speed up, it is so fast on a Opus or Fable level model that you just haven't solved yet? I'm curious, because most people say go big or go home. You were like, hey, I'm going to start small and scale up. I'm just curious.
Yeah, the main difference is that, you know, we are developing something completely different And so we had to do a lot of, solve a lot of open problems. There was a lot of science to be developed to really understand what is the right way to train these models, what is the right way to sample from these models. We had to build a serving engine to actually serve production workloads. And it's a lot easier to iterate, a lot faster, a lot cheaper to iterate on small to medium-sized models as opposed to extremely large neural networks that would be very expensive to train and require a lot of infrastructure to build to get started. And so it made sense to figure out the recipe on relatively small-scale models, figure out what is the right way to get these models to perform well, and then gradually increase the size of the models to essentially what you said, increase the level of intelligence, the quality, while preserving the speed advantage, which is always going to be there, just like because the architecture is more parallel. And so to the extent that you're working with GPUs, where you have typically more flops than memory bandwidth, then this is always going to be, it's always going to be better than a sequential one token at a time kind of architecture.
Makes sense. I like to do, we have a couple more things and then we'll wrap up. I like to always ask a future prediction question. And here's my question for you, because I think you're perfectly suited to answer it. GPU and GPU capacity is going like this. Even smaller devices are getting a lot more either integrated system on a chip or HBM. They're all going up. Model sizes, to be honest, I think have been fairly flat. Like, I mean, there's big ones, there's little ones. You know, I think people are like, much like at Dell when we have our workstations, right? We fill out the portfolio based on, hey, here's an entry-level model, here's the Haiku, here's the Opus level, here's the Fable level, right? And they're all different prices and costs and all that. But I guess the question for you is, with VRAM capacity going up and the devices getting smaller, like, and taking up less space, where do you think the overall model market is going? Do you think that it is going to be a... there will be a model, like, for example, you have Mercury that's designed to do kind of all these things, agentic tasks, it will be voids, it will do all this. Do you see separate, smaller focus models? Do you see bigger models that do everything? Do you see, like, train for specific tasks? Like, where do you think in, like, the next, let's say, year, the model market will head?
Yeah, I think it's all going to be a matter of, like, intelligence per dollar or intelligence per watt, basically. The model that has the best performance along that dimension, which is basically the inference time scaling of the model, is the one that is going to win. And my prediction is that you're always going to be able to do better if you specialize, as opposed to have a single model that does everything. And so my prediction is that, again, kind of like cost and trying to squeeze the most intelligence given the resources that you have is going to be increasingly important. And one way to optimize for that is going to be having either different types of models that are optimized for different use cases or different sizes of models that are kind of like more specialized.
Yeah. So it's really coming down to where you think the market's heading. It's not necessarily model size or that. It's really like intelligence per token or intelligence per watt or per whatever, and whatever power metric you want to use. That's interesting. Because I kind of agree, right? At the end of the day, it's very hard to compare. I mean, there are model benchmarks, right? And, you know, I'm not a benchmark modeler, but like I've read stories about like, hey, it's kind of like you're going to hate this because you were a professor, but when I was in college and undergrad, I was in a fraternity, right? And we had a test bank. So I kind of knew some of the questions that were coming, not the exact test, but previous tests. So I was able to hone in on what that professor kind of looked for. So by default, I was kind of fine-tuned to ultimately be able to answer the test. And I know that there's things like that that have been happening, but the intelligence per watt is interesting because it really boils it down to not a benchmark, but it's the cost. Like, what are you getting for every 25 cents for a million tokens in? What do you get it? All right. Last thing before we wrap up, I just do a rapid fire section. And this is just first thing that comes to your head, no long answers. Basically, your model, Mercury, has been described as revolutionary, and it's been described as 10x faster. Which one of those words gets you into a customer's door faster?
10x faster.
10x faster. Okay. What is the most overused word in AI pitches today?
Recursive.
Oh, that's a good one. Enterprise buyer or developer? Who's harder to win over?
Enterprise buyers.
really. I would have said dev, because devs are devs. They're tough.
I feel like the devs, they vote with their feet and they will pick the best solution. I think when you sell to enterprises, there is all kinds of other complicating things that matter.
And last question is, say you get 30 seconds with a highly influential, skeptical AI reporter. Are you leading with the story first, or are you leading with the numbers first?
Always story.
Okay. So Fano, this was fantastic. So what I like to do to close out the episode is all of the listeners, give the website, you know, contact information, where can they find you? And we'll obviously put it in the show notes below, but tell everyone where they can find you.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much. This was awesome.
All right. Well, tell everyone real quick, like, where can they find you on the web? How to connect if they want to learn more about Mercury?
Yeah. So our website, inceptionlabs.ai, is a great way to learn about Inception and then get access to our models, go on our platform, see the model cards, see some cookbooks. There's a lot of information on our website. That's the place I would go to.
Well, thank you, Stefano. I really appreciate it. And with that, kind of closes out the episode. So I would challenge you, if you're like me and you're an open router nut, go check it out. Go check out Mercury 2. I'm going to do it. Well, I have more podcasts recorded today, but then tonight I will be checking it out. And with that, till next time, we'll see you on Reshaping Workflows. We'll see you on the next one.
This podcast was produced in partnership with Amaze Media Lab.